of the four Minneapolis police officers charged in the killing of George Floyd, only Derek Chauvin, who pressed his knee on Floyd's neck, is charged with second-degree murder. J. Alexander Kang, Toh Tao, and Thomas Lane are each charged with aiding and abetting second-degree murder and manslaughter because they didn't intervene to stop Chauvin. Now, several cities have since scrambled to mandate duty-to-intervene directives, meaning officers have to try to stop unwarranted force. But Minneapolis already had that policy. And the family of Officer Kang, who is black, is stunned. They say he joined the force to change it from the inside, to stop excessive force. His lawyer says he did tell Chauvin he should stop, but he didn't stop him. In a moment, we'll speak with Baltimore's new police commissioner, Michael Harrison, about teaching police to intervene. But meanwhile, to answer the question, why don't they? Arthur Reiser is a former police officer. He's now at R Street, the conservative libertarian think tank. And Arthur, you say this is a relatively simple answer to the question.
You're right. It is a simple solution to a very complex problem, which is you have to change police culture. And that's very, very difficult.
You know, it's something called the Wall of Blue, the Code of Silence. Other professions also have a duty to intervene. A doctor has one if he sees another doctor doing something wrong. A lawyer has one. But police are like the military. Everyone is armed, and you depend on them to have your back. You know, it might be harder to call someone out. Also, there's a hierarchy. Chauvin had been a police officer with Minneapolis police for nearly 19 years. Kang was on his third shift. Another officer, Thomas Lane, had been on the force for 4 days. Chauvin was their training officer on the scene.
So I think you hit the nail on the head in the sense that it is incredibly difficult to not only consider yourself a rookie, and when you're a rookie, you're indoctrinated, you're hazed into the idea that you don't know anything. I mean, every FTO says this to every rookie when you get into your car. I know what they taught you in the academy, but I'm going to tell you how to actually be a cop. So it is an incredible pressure to put on someone to correct their FTO when they're seeing something. Maybe they know something that I don't know. You know, he's been in the mix a lot more than I have. He has fought for his life more than likely. I think all of those add to the complexity of what actually played out on that horrible day in Minneapolis.
Well, and again, the thinking could also be, if I do this, I'm going to be the rap.
We've always had this sense that you do not rat on your fellow officer, your fellow plumber, your fellow whatever. It's something kind of ingrained into us.
How should duty to intervene work? You say there are exceptions.
Well, there is the general law, actus reus, and generally speaking, you do not have to intervene in something. That's just, if I saw you drowning, I am not obligated to try to rescue you. You know, if I'm the one that got you in a situation where you were drowning, I would have to intervene. And when you're talking about the duty to intervene with officers, what you're really saying is that you are criminally culpable if you do not act. That actually goes against the vast majority of our jurisprudence. Listen, if you carry a gun, there's certain responsibility that comes along with that. And one of those is you should intervene if you see something going sideways.
Well, but officers have and been fired for it. In Chicago, Lorenzo Davis says he was fired for not backing off his conclusion that police were not justified in some shooting. A court, a jury, awarded him $2 million. He hasn't seen it yet. But he says this kind of duty to intervene absolutely makes you a pariah. What do you think has to happen to somehow crack that code?
We need the core leadership within police departments to fundamentally change the way they think about policing. I've actually, you know, interviewed police officers, and most do not believe that their job is prestigious. But by changing that mentality and using them as the key to switch police culture, I think can go a long way.
Yeah. And I'm just wondering if you think there's been some change. You know, there was a video of Crystal Smith, the black Fort Lauderdale police officer, who yelled at her white colleague who was roughing up a peaceful protester. She chased him off, you know, and her police chief stood by her and suspended the white officer.
Yeah, because transparency is the key to fixing culture. And right now, there's more light, you know, being shined down on policing than ever before. The fact is that police now are better than they ever have been. So do I have hope? I absolutely have hope. But we need to ensure that they have the right tools and the right support in order to do the right thing.
Arthur Reiser, former police officer and current director of criminal justice and civil liberties policy at R Street, the conservative libertarian think tank. Arthur, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
Well, now to Michael Harrison, Baltimore police commissioner since January. Before that, he was in New Orleans, where he instituted the EPIC, or Ethical Policing is Courageous program, developed by Professor Irvin Staub at UMass Amherst. Now, both cities were under Justice Department investigations that led to consent decrees, promises to revamp their departments. So, commissioner, now at Baltimore, what is EPIC?
EPIC, or Ethical Policing is Courageous, is based on the science of active versus passive bystandership. People who see something, they either choose to do nothing or they choose to do something or intervene. And so we now convert that to policing, where we are teaching and have taught in New Orleans and will be very soon here in Baltimore, teaching police officers how to intervene on the part of their colleagues when we see another officer escalating or headed down a wrong path to make a decision that they or all of us will regret.
You say you're trying to create loyalty to the other officer on the front end, not on the back end after something's happened, but before it has.
Right. That is correct. And so what we have done historically in the profession is ask officers to cover for us when we make mistakes. EPIC teaches us how to have the appropriate display of loyalty by stepping in before a bad act happens, thereby showing loyalty on the front end, as you've mentioned. It saves an injury, it saves a broken relationship between police and community, and it saves an officer's career.
And so how does it work? We understand it's not just a lecture in a classroom. It's something almost physical to, I guess, create cell memory. How does it work?
It does create what we call muscle memory. That is correct. First of all, we teach the science of bystandership, active versus passive. And we teach about the dangers of what happens when we fail to intervene versus what we achieve when we actually intervene. Then we go through active scenarios, hands-on scenarios, where the officers are taught how to intervene and step between perhaps a citizen and another officer, even in the case of a higher rank. And the department has to have a strong anti-retaliation policy so as to not have retaliation or ostracize members when they actually do that.
And so are you talking about actual skits? Physically, you'll have them act that out. Could be grabbing an arm that's raised. It could be physically stopping them.
It could be. Yeah, oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But the goal of the intervention should occur long before that, when tone of voice and body language begin to escalate to suggest that it could go to that. We want to intervene long before it ever gets to a person who is about to strike.
Wow. Look, you have had success with this in New Orleans. The complaints of officer use of force have gone down. Now you're in Baltimore, where the Justice Department found officers routinely made unconstitutional stops, searches, and arrests disproportionately affecting African Americans. You know, they knew you were coming in, having instituted this in New Orleans. What are you hearing from cops?
So cops are anticipating that this is coming. And so what we're hearing is that it is much needed. There probably will be some skepticism at first, but this is a program for officers by officers. We're looking for officers to sell it to their colleagues and their friends. And it prevents me from having to use and to disseminate discipline, because we're actually preventing bad acts from happening.
Does there also, Commissioner, have to be more celebration of officers who do intervene? We mentioned the officer, a woman, who chased away a white officer when he started to attack a passive protester. Her chief of police celebrated her.
When you want to change culture, you have to change the reward system. And we often reward, you know, saving lives. I applaud that chief for openly celebrating an officer who intervenes, because we all have a duty to intervene. But beyond duty, we should be doing it because it is the right thing to do.
Well, Commissioner, we know that there are so many police officers who tirelessly work to protect civilians. But we are talking about the use of excessive force and a duty to intervene. And that lack of intervention happens disproportionately to blacks. You are a black man, and there's culture here, but there's also history. Police were used to track down runaway slaves, you know that, or charge freed slaves with unwarranted fees to re-enslave them. Then later, to racially profile blacks or stop and frisk. You know, this was a culture of keeping blacks in their place. It was a job that was assigned to America's police. How do you change that cultural DNA where it still exists?
Well, first of all, many police officers don't really understand the history. It begins to be an issue of educating our officers on the history of policing. And number two, talking about the damage that it has done and it has caused, and what happens when poor public policy translate into over-incarceration or incarceration of wrong people for the wrong reasons. Then we have to have policies that deal with implicit bias and make sure we can overcome our biases. And then we have to make sure that there's good supervision to make sure that officers are following the Constitution and the performance of their duty. And then obviously documenting that so that we can have quality assurance that we did it right.
That's Baltimore Police Commissioner Michael Harrison. Thank you so much, Commissioner Harrison, and best of luck to you there in Baltimore.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
And tomorrow, a police officer who says she was fired when she intervened to stop excessive force by a cop who was later jailed for excessive force. That's tomorrow, here and now.